The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I'm here with Luca Colia, the export manager for Borgogna, one of the most, and I just mispronounced it, but we'll just keep going, one of the most famous Barolo producers in all of the world. Luca, thank you so much for being part of this.
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew. It's a pleasure for me to call you from Italy and from Borgogna Winery.
Yeah, Borgogna. Yeah, I don't even know how to pronounce
it. It's a tough name. It's, you know, it's Italian. Borgogna.
Yeah, it's actually not a tough name, but you're being very nice. I appreciate that. Before we get in, actually, let's go in a different direction. Before we get into the story of the winery and your own story, I'm imagining you're somewhere in the Piemonte area. Where are you right now?
Right now, I'm at the winery, at the Borgogna factory, let's say, which is the oldest, by the way, the oldest winery cellar we have in Barolo town. So we are based in Barolo.
I say this, and I'm wildly biased because I've visited twice, but I've also been to Tuscany as well. I always tell everyone, if they're going to go to Italy for the first time, I understand doing Rome and the Pisa and all of that, but Northern Italy, for less busy, better wine, you're near mountains. Like, just tell everyone right now why, when you land in Verona, go north. Go and visit your area.
Yeah, we are in the northwest, so on the border with France. I would say it's a very peculiar, characteristic region. So you can find very high level food, very high level of wine. Barolo is one of the most famous appellations we have in Italy. People are very friendly. You can have a lot of different experiences here. This is a little bit tough to say for me because I was born in Calabria, so southern. But this place, especially the Lange area, is special. So please come.
It really is. And what amazed me is that if you go to certain famous wine regions, we know which ones they are, it can be hard to visit. Some wineries, Burgundy, they hide. They don't want you coming anywhere near them. But what I found amazing about Barolo is we would go to, you know, very well-known vineyards and just knock on the door, and people could not have been nicer or more generous with their time. And I always recommend, if you want to go and see a famous wine region where everyone's really nice, Lange is kind of one place I always tell everyone to go to.
Yeah, well, Matthew, you have very humble people here. You have to think that till 50, 60 years ago, here this area was undeveloped. Now there was the explosion of the Barolo appellation, the Barbera. But before, there were just farmers in the area. So they're very humble. They are very hospitable, let's say. They like to have people here to taste them, to show them how they cook, how they drink, how they live. So it's a beautiful place to live, to visit. And I think Lange is the closest thing we have in Italy to the Burgundy. So very high level kind of place.
Yeah. Oh, no, it does. And we'll get to that in a second. I want to get to some of the similarities between Burgundy and Barolo. But Luca, that's a good point. For an area that makes so much historic wine, it really didn't become, it became famous far later than Bordeaux and then Burgundy. That's a good point. But well, maybe we'll circle back there, but tell us a little bit about the story of the winery. You mentioned how old it was. In my research, was wine from your winery used to celebrate the unification of Italy back in 1861?
Well, basically, like I said, we are the oldest, the most ancient winery in the area, 1761, founded by a farmer in a time where, you know, wine was something related more to rich people, to wealthy people, like kings, like famous people of that time. Instead, for Borgogna, the story was a little bit different because Bartolomeo Borgogna, the founder, the first of the five generation of Borgogna we had, he was a farmer. So he was the first farmer to think to bottle the wine. This makes us very special. And then, like you said, 1761, we were born. 100 years later, there was the Italian unification. And the king of Italy, Vittorio Emanuele II, the second, with the warrior Garibaldi, they were cheering to the unification with our Barolo Classico Borgogna.
That is cool. Yeah, just in my research. And the interesting thing about you guys is there's so much about history and tradition, but also about innovation, about going back and using concrete for your for fermentation and just the embracing of organic. I was wondering if you could sort of explain to people just how, I mean, we could go on and on about how the history of your winery, but just also all the modern innovations over the last decade or so.
Well, of course we are very traditional, classic, but like you said, it's very important to be contemporary more than modern, you know. Contemporary means that you want to have some wines that are made in a traditional way, so using the concrete, like you said. The concrete were there from forever, but lately we bought new casks of concrete. We don't use, for example, any barrique. This is something that arrived in the Lange area lately, the last 40, 35 years. So we don't use any barriques, just medium or big size Slavone and oak.
Right.
This is the tradition. But at the same time, we want to express wines which are very enjoyable, approachable, despite you can age them for many, many years, especially when we talk about Barolo, you know. Barolo is a wine that you can drink. It used to be a very tough kind of wine, you know, a wine that takes you a lot of times in your glass or in your cellar, and maybe you forget about it. But actually, the last techniques we experienced, not just Borgogna, I would say, but Borgogna especially, are to make wines that are very fruity, with a lot of flowers on the nose, for example, but very enjoyable from the first sip.
And yeah, I noticed that when we met, it was a while ago now, Noble Estates, an excellent consignment company here in Toronto, represent you, some of your wines are part of their portfolio. And I remember sipping through from just, I think it was like a simple Barbera, the 100% Nebbiolo, all the way to the Reserve Barolo. And the one thing that they were approachable, even your higher end wines, you could drink now if you decant it for a couple hours.
Yeah. So we are also in this way, traditional and contemporary. Traditional in the sense that we work just on the grapes from this area. So Dolcetto, Barbera, Nebbiolo, Act to Barolo as well. This is our very crucial for us. Lately, we invested also on some whites because we are famous for Barolo, for reds. And after 250 years of history, we wanted to have also some whites. The first one was Lange Riesling. Lange Riesling is an appellation that is here from a while now, at least 30 years. And then the last acquisition was in not so close to us, still in Piemonte, in the Colli Tortonesi, where we produce a beautiful, beautiful wine called Timorasso d'Ertona, which is considered the most complex white wine from Italy, actually. So the reds are very crucial, but also whites are becoming more and more important. So classic grapes, traditional grapes, indigenous grapes, but also, you know, with an eye to something new to propose to our consumers.
How difficult is it to we'll stick with Riesling because I can pronounce that better than the other varietal you mentioned. I'm a coward. How hard is it for you as an export manager to try to sell Riesling from that area? Because, you know, people have it in their mind, Riesling, okay, that's Germany, you know, it may be Australia, but certainly not the land of Barolo.
Well, I'm a very lucky person, I guess, because when you sell a brand, a seller like Borgogna, you know, you have a lot of open doors right for you. The brand is very famous worldwide, I would say. So, you know, people, they want to taste new things by a winery like this. At the same time, I'm traveling all over the world to sell these wines, and I see a lot of... our production is not huge. It's a small production. It's a boutique winery. So we don't have a lot of barrels to sell. So I have the right clients, the right accounts all over the world, from Asia to North America, where, you know, here and there you can sell the right amount of bottles of these unique gems.
You mentioned travel. Let's get into you a little bit, Luca. How much do you travel in a given year? And how difficult has it been? Because Toronto, Pearson Airport stinks. And, you know, traveling, I know Paris sometimes is a disaster. What is life like for you been the last year?
Well, after COVID, changed a little bit, just because, you know, before COVID, we were traveling all the time. And then we understood that, you know, there are some things that you can do on videos, like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, you can spend an hour, 2 hours in front of a computer and talk about business. But generally talking, after COVID, we do, let's say, 60, 65% of our time during the year traveling all over the world. So I'm very happy about that. My girlfriend, a little bit less. But this is life. This is my job, and it's I think it's a beautiful, beautiful job. I love it.
Well, tell me a little bit about it. You know, like, I talked to, and you're not the first export manager. You won't be the last, but, you know, it's something that it doesn't get discussed as much, but you're an important part of the whole wine world. So tell people a little bit about what your job entails.
Well, this is the beautiful thing about this kind of job. So you are able to travel and to sell beautiful wines, and also to meet new and different cultures from yours. You know, I'm proudly Italian, of course, like I told you, from Calabria, Calabrese. But at the same time, I'm very open-minded, and I'd like to change my point of view all the time to learn from other people, other cultures. So this is beautiful. You know, you are able to come to Canada sometimes, and then after a couple of weeks, you are in Asia, maybe in China, maybe in Japan or in Australia, wherever. Europe, of course, is very important for us. So Bourgogne now is sold in almost 70 countries. Everything is practically by allocation, so you don't have to push it. But it's funny. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of how to say. It's a lot of beautiful mixture with other cultures, and I love it.
Is there a country that you were surprised by how much they love not just your wines, but the wines of Northern Italy?
Yeah, you know, one of our main market for Bourgogne is Sweden. You know, Sweden is a very small country. If you think about the population, it's very small compared to Canada, not Canada in population, but maybe to United States compared to very small. But actually, you know, there is they are very big fan of Bourgogne, and in general, they're very big fan of Italian wine. And it's also a country where people, they have the possibility to spend a little bit more on very high-end kind of bottles compared to others, for example. So Sweden, it's very impressive. But I can tell you more. Norway, which is close, is very interesting. Holland, the Netherlands are pretty nice. And last year, I was very, very happy to open for the first time a market we never worked on, Mongolia.
Really?
Which is huge in terms of territory and small in terms of population. So, but it was an important step for us.
Did you get to travel there? Or was
Not yet. I hope soon to get there.
Wow. Well, you know what? That I had a bunch of countries in mind. Switzerland makes sense. It's close to you. I certainly did not expect Mongolia. Well, how did you get into wine? How did you eventually get into this job?
Well, I didn't study about wine. My background is about political science, international relations. So I grew up in Calabria until I was 18, and then I moved to the north in Emilia Romagna in Forlì to study political science. And then step by step, I finished my studies, and then I decided to look for a job. And I had a few more options, and the most interesting thing was wine. And so I started from there. It was a small company in Emilia-Romagna, then spent a few years in the spirits industry, selling some limoncello, sambuca, amaro, typical from Italy. And then it's been a while now. I'm working for Borgogna, so I got back to my first love, let's say.
And how did you get in with them? Was it just as simple as you applied and they liked you? I mean, to get to such a historic.
Pretty much like that. You have to speak English first of all. You know, not all the Italians speak English when they live in Italy. They don't need to sometimes. And then you know, I was very willing to travel. Mm-hmm. And that's the important thing.
Yeah,
and, you know, in any way, wine is so important in our culture that even if you didn't study it, you know about it. For example, my grandfather in Calabria used to make wine, homemade wine. So I always seen him making it. Same my father. So you know, it was something that had in my DNA.
How hard would it be if you were the export manager for your own family's wine?
Well, I'll tell you something. It would be very difficult to talk about the Calabrian wine, but the technique my grandfather used to have, it was a natural wine. Mm-hmm. And natural wines right now are increasing their business like crazy. So
yes.
And again, the production was so small that I think I could be able to sell it.
Nice. It might be harder to do Calabria Riesling. Not really the region.
No, you make Gallopo, Maglocco.
How different or how much your wine knowledge today versus when you were 21, how different is it?
Very, very different. Even because the winery I work for Borgogna is investing into all the people that are working for it. So we took courses, we took lessons, and we finished at the end of last year the second part of the WSET.
Yep.
And this year we're going to do the third. So, you know, for sure these lessons are very important, but I think the most important thing is to try and try and try wines. So I'm able to do it not just in Italy, but always when I'm traveling. You know, I was in London last week. And then I try again our wines, but also the wines of other producers from other regions, of other nations. So, you know, it's always, you know, to learn, you have to try.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is there what's your favorite? What is there a region in Appalachian that just blew you away?
So if I say Barolo, you know, it's too basic.
We put Barolo to the side. We put Barolo to the side, which, by the way, when I do my rankings of the greatest wines, Barolo is always in the top three or four anyway. But yes. What is it for you beyond Nebbiolo?
You know, I like a lot Friuli for whites. Friuli is in the northeast of Italy, on the border with Slovenia and Austria. And they are famous for whites. They have beautiful grapes, indigenous grapes, like Ribolla Gialla, for example. They are a big producer of Pinot Grigio, Aramato, that I like a lot. But I also love Sicily. And if I have to choose just one, is the Etna wines. So Nerello Mascalese for red, it's very intriguing. It's growing as an appellation.
And similar, sorry to interrupt. And there is some similar characteristics between that and Nebbiolo.
Yes, I would say the closest thing is though is Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but still all thinner skin grapes versus, you know, say Cabernet Sauvignon.
For sure, also the color. Yeah. And then for the white, I would choose... there they have a beautiful Carrecante, which is very interesting, but maybe, you know, there are some producers in Campania that make very nice whites like Fiano, like Greco, the Tufo, but just the smallest one. I love that kind of expression of kind of soil from Irpinia, for example.
So tell people a little bit about about your portfolio, and it's, I mean, I guess specifically what is more readily available. You know, I tried a bunch again through Noble Estates, but you know, brag a little bit. Tell people a little bit about these wines. What makes these wines so good? What makes these wines so famous?
Well, for sure, our experience, because we have been taking care of the vineyards from forever now. It's been five generation of Borgogno, then two generation of other family called Boschis, and now there is the Farnetti family. So eighth generation of families taking care of this vineyard. So you know how to treat them, you know how old they are, and you know how to make your wine. This is the vineyard. But then it's very important to talk about the work that the winemaker and his co-workers are putting into the cellar. You know, like we spoke about the cement. It's very important when you make your Barolos, for example, because we make fermentation and maceration, which are pretty long inside the cement. Then we use this Slavonian oak, which is very old, very used. So the touch of the wood would be in our wines is very little, never too much. Mm-hmm. There, in our cellar, there are 70 years old kind of oaks, barrels. So you can imagine how important it is. And then to interpret it, this is very important, the vintage. You know, you have some vintages like 2016, which are incredible in terms of quantity and quality, are unbelievable and not comparable to anything else. And then there are other vintages. For example, some people that were talking in the Lange of about 2014, which is a little bit more difficult because it was too cold. And then you have to put more effort to work on that kind of vintage. So it depends, you know, it depends on, of course, on the wine and on the vintage, you know. The good thing about the wine is not that it is never standard, you know?
Right, yeah.
My life is not like Coca-Cola that has to have always the same kind of taste. No, wine can be different every year, every vintage. That's very, very important for us. And we have to interpret the wine for sure.
Yeah.
Then you mentioned before, sorry if I interrupt, but we are trying to convert everything to organic. This is very difficult, you know, especially lately. The weather was pretty warm in the Lange area. We had snow last night. I talked to the winemaker this morning. He was so happy, finally, okay? Because it was very dry without rain, so snow is very important for us, and rain will be very important in the springtime. But especially when you turn everything to organic, because you have to spend more time into the vineyards, and you cannot intervene if at a certain point you have any kind of problem, you know, you have to be always natural.
And that is difficult because, as you said, you know, nature is going to do what nature wants to do, which can make that difficult. Hey, by the way, we were talking earlier about you guys don't use French barrique barrels, like the smaller ones you would see in wineries all over the world. This is a battle. How much of a battle is this still in Barolo? Because there is the modern wineries using the little barriques, and then you guys more traditional, the big giant Slovenian oak. You know, what kind of, I find it fascinating that there is a clash of styles going on in your little area.
Well, this is the beautiful thing about Italy. You know, every place, every person is different from the other.
Yeah.
So everybody interprets everything on its own way. Of course, we cannot say bad thing about the other producers that they want to, you know, use the barrique. But like I said, barrique, the small one, it's something that arrived in the Lange in the last years. So it's not part of the tradition. And like I said, we believe that Nebbiolo especially needs space to express itself. So you don't want to put it into the barrique. The barrique is a very big influence by the wood. In our case, when you have the big sides, the influence is very soft. Indeed, again, I don't want to talk bad about the other interpretations, but this is our interpretation. Sometimes, you know, if you use the barrique, you can be ready a little bit before the others, just because, you know, with the influence of the wood, you are able to get out a little bit before the others. You know, it's an interpretation, like in right. other things, even on the way you treat your vineyard. You know, maybe you have the experience on that single vineyard, and you believe that that single vineyard is you have to treat it in that way. Regarding Borgogna, I would say that we are very lucky because all our vineyards act to Barolo, so Nebbiolo vineyards are in Barolo town. Barolo is very important because it's in the middle of the Lange. So you have a kind of soil which is very peculiar, with a layer of sand and then mulch, clay, and calcareous zone. So the plant has a different expression. We also own 5 single vineyards. Between these 5 single vineyards, which are Cannubi, Cannubi San Lorenzo, Liste, Fossati, and San Pietro Le Viole, Cannubi is the most famous single vineyard of the entire Lange. Believe me that to buy an hectare of Cannubi now, it's the most expensive place in Italy to buy an hectare. And you are around at least 2.5 million of euros to buy just an hectare.
So that's a great answer, because that kind of takes me where I want to go next. Someone is at the LCBO and they see your wine, or they see Barolo, and they see the word Cannubi on the label. What does that mean?
So Barolo is the appellation. So you can make Barolo from Odelange Act to Barolo. It's a small place. Don't get me wrong.
It's tiny. Yeah.
It's the total production of Barolo nowadays is 14 million of barrels. That's it. You cannot enlarge it.
Yeah.
This is the rule. With the weather we had lately was between 13 and 12 million. So a little bit less. But just imagine Champagne, which is more than 400 million of bottles every year, just to understand the difference.
Yeah.
So we are in a small place. So you can make your Barolo Classico, the Barolo that we all know, from all these vineyards that are in the Lange area, from different municipalities, from Serralunga, from La Morra, from Barolo, and you can mix them together to make your Barolo if you have the vineyards in the other places. When you have the other appellation, the sub-appellation, like in this case, Cannubi, it means that you are making your Barolo just from that single vineyard. What they in France, they call it cru. So Cannubi is just a hill. And if you own a single vineyard there, a plot, a small parcel of that hill, you can produce your Barolo Cannubi just from that single vineyard and declare it as a special wine. So it's a wine that it's for people that they want to collect the wine, that there are, they know very well this kind of appellation, and they want to drink something very premium, an upgrade of the regular Barolo, let's say.
So it's like the Premier Grand Cru of Burgundy. And if you get a Barolo that's sourced from the whole area, maybe that's more the Village level. So what I'm curious about, what is it about Cannubi? What is it about the slope, the soil, where the sun is coming in? What is it that makes those wines there just the some of the best expressions of Nebbiolo?
Well, the Lange are divided into two macro areas. The oldest one is in the area of Serralunga d'Alba, Monforte, mm-hmm. Castiglione, Falletto. It means that the sea, the ocean, 13 million of years ago left that area and started to become land. Then on the other side, on the opposite, on the west side, northwest especially, you have La Morra, which is the youngest place to make Barolo and also the highest in terms of altitude. It means that the kind of soil in La Morra is less clay and calcareous than Serralunga and Monforte, a little bit more sandy. So you have two different of expression of Barolos. From the area of the eastern side, so the most ancient, you have a kind of soil which gives you very structured, superpower kind of Barolo that you can age for many, many years. On La Morra, instead, having a little bit more sand, you have a kind of a Barolo which are a little bit more elegant, a little bit more approachable from the...
Right.
The good thing about Barolo, where we are and where we have our old vineyards from of Nebbiolo, is the fact that Barolo is the spine of the two areas. So it's just in the middle.
Right.
It means that you have both the characteristic, the structure, the power of the eastern side, and the elegance, the approachability of the western side, just in one place. That is very special for us. And again, having from a while now, working on some single vineyards like Cannubi or as well Liste, which is not so known like Cannubi, but very interesting. This gives us a lot of experience, a lot of know-how to treat our vineyards and to make beautiful, beautiful wines.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had Canubi. I've not had Listi before. I've had wines from most of those other communes, but I have to, you know, I have to go and find that. Tell everyone a little bit about one wine that was really good, your protest wine. What do people need to know about the wine that has no name?
This is a funny story, and No Name is also our top seller. It was born for a problem, you know, and became a great opportunity. So basically, it's a label called No Name, a label of protest, Etichetta di Protesta. And the first year, the Farnetti family, the current owner, bought the winery in 2008. You know, the first year you have a winery like Borgogno, but also others. The most important thing in your life is to release your first Barolo vintage. Okay, so Andrea Farnetti at that time, he was very young. He was 20 years old. So you can imagine how stubborn he was.
Yeah.
So he made his first vintage. When you release your Barolo in Italy, you have to go through a commission. The commission analyze the wine, doing technical analysis, and then taste the wine and says, and they can say, yes, this is a DOCG Barolo appellation, or they can say no, because it is lacking something. So we had these big, big barrels containing more or less 16,000 barrels. You can imagine how big it was.
Yeah,
but we are a small producer, I told you before. So the problem for us, it was the fact that we weren't able to bottle from the same big barrels, these 16,000 barrels in one day. So what we did, as usual we do, we divided into two different smaller tanks. So in this case, if you do like this, even if you bottle in two different days, you have to send two different samples. So we send the two different samples to the commission. They taste and analyze the first one. Perfect, DOCG Barolo. Then they do analysis and tasting on the second. The analysis went well. The tasting, they saying, this is not typical in the color. And they gave us a month to modify a little bit the wine.
Really?
Yeah, you know, this is an anti-fraud commission that is giving you the possibility not to make a fraud. I'm not saying that, but yeah, you know, to change a little bit your wine, to change the wine and the color. The only way it's possible is to add a little bit of other grapes, like for example Barbera, but their regulation about Barolo doesn't allow you to add other kind of.
No, you can't.
What we did is to resend the same sample from the two same tanks, and the results was the same.
Ah.
So Andrea, very stubborn, decided not to do anything to change it. Then he went to his father, to Oscar Farnetti, to a dinner, and said, Papa, we have a problem. I have 80,000 barrels of Barolo, but they don't give me the appellation. It's a financial problem. You imagine, you just buy the most ancient winery in the Lange area, and you 80,000 barrels, so you have to declassify them from Barolo to Lange Nebbiolo. You know that the price of
going way down.
Yeah, at least half the price.
Yeah.
For 8,000 barrels for the first year, it's a big, big problem. So the father said, you know, this is not a problem. This is an opportunity. Let's call this wine Senza Nome. Senza Nome means no name. After a while, they thought about it and they thought, you know, maybe Senza Nome is just Italian. Let's call it with an international name. No Name, Label of Protest. Label of Protest against all the bureaucracy we have in Italy. We are farmers. We want to make wine and not make any paper. That's the idea. Believe me, in Italy, we have 11 commissions giving you the appellations for different appellations, different regulations, different things. In France, they have just two. In Spain, just one.
Oh.
So this is our difficulty. We want to make good wines, not to make papers.
That's hilarious.
It's a huge, huge success.
And it's a great wine. It's 100% Nebbiolo. It's a fantastic wine.
Yeah, that's what we do every year. Well, yeah. Part of our Barolo is declassified by ourselves on purpose too long Nebbiolo, just to have it no name. So basically, who is buying the no name is buying a Barolo a little bit with a more interesting price and the quality of a Barolo. So it's called our baby Barolo.
Nice. It's perfect. It's a great wine. Yes, it is a baby Barolo. Somewhere in between a Barolo and 100% Langhe Nebbiolo is the no name in the middle. Luca, really appreciate you doing this. And this just came to, I was at the tasting and, you know, that was your guys was the one that was one of the ones that stuck out for me versus all the other places. It's a fabulous winery. Where can people go? What website? Where can people go to find your wines?
Well, in Canada, in Ontario, you have them at Italy. For sure, you find them. And then we have a couple of SKUs on the shelves of LCBO. Then there are some good restaurants that Naval Estates, our agency, our partner in Ontario, is distributing. Very high-end restaurants. But my suggestion is to go to Italy because you can find different kind of appellations by Borgogno. For sure, the no name, a little bit of Barolo, a little bit of Barbera, also some whites. So yeah. I think it's pretty interesting. So why not?
Luca, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being a part of the podcast, my friend.
Thank you, Matthew. And let me once again thanks also Noble Estate, which is giving us good feedback from the market, is treating our brand in the right way. Thank you. Thank you for your time, Matthew, and I hope to see you soon in person.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.